Okay, so this is the second class in our current 6 week session, and it's actually a very important class, I think. Trying to understand more fully the nature of time and the possibilities that time presents is important in all its manifestations. And one of the great things about these TSK books is, as you know, if you've managed to stay with us here, is that every page, every paragraph practically is an invitation for a really fundamental shift. So we always have the possibility for new insight, but in this particular class, I think it's very much it's in our face is what I want to say. Rinpoche is saying, look, this is the way we usually do it. We don't have to do it this way. Let's start to explore some other ways of doing it. And in terms of the conceptual part of it, what he's doing is showing us how the usual understanding of time that's in place is it's only one possibility, and there's a very different possibility. So that's what we want to talk about. I want to do a practice fairly early. There's only a few of us here, so we'll see, how much comment there is on the practice. But I do want to get us more into practice mode now, because because concepts are always just concepts, and we need to activate them. So, in the last program in the fall, we looked at the past, and the key insight about the past, it seems to me, the one that we can carry forward into this session, is that the past depends on identity, which means that the past depends on what has already been established. When we engage the world in terms of the identity of the things that occur, that's the identities of the things in the world that we perceive. It's certainly our own identity, very fundamentally and centrally so. And it's even also the identity of our thoughts, and memories, all the little idle things that run through our minds. We're always naming and identifying and labeling them, which means that we find ourselves in the realm of what has already happened, or to use the term from the last program, everything has already happened. It's very centered on the past. So that's our usual way of understanding, because the self also depends on having an identity. To say that I do this or I do that means that there is an identified entity, there is a someone who has certain experiences. So that's all past centered. And what we're looking at in the reading today is what would it be like to be future centered? So it's this really fundamental shift, and that's why I said the reading for today, the discussion for today is so central. So at the very end of the last reading, and I mentioned this in the orientation, Rinpoche says that what we need is a new way of knowing. Let me find the exact language. He says to engage the future directly, because we want to say, okay, enough of the past already. We want to do something different. We want to center ourselves in the future or engage the future directly. And he says to engage the future directly, we can practice coming toward the future with a way of knowing suited to its ongoing becoming. So this is really fundamental. I've used that word several times now, but it does seem to me that we're talking about something fundamental. We need a different way of knowing, a way of knowing that aligns with becoming rather than being, I guess, if by being we mean the identity, you know, things that have specific identities and exist in that way. That's our usual way of knowing. We want to do it differently. A way of knowing that does not depend on identities. And what Rinpoche says then at the top of page 94, still the reading for last week, he says that amounts to a not knowing. A not knowing in the sense that there is nothing to be known. So what that means is we're going to know in accordance with the future instead of the past. According to the past, there are always things to be known. So the past is in the business of setting up identities, and that's what there is available to be known. And so our knowing, when it's past-centered, insists on this and that, you know, specific identities. Now we're looking at the future, and our knowing says there isn't anything to be known. If we were still concerned with the past, there would be, but there isn't anything to be known. And another way to say that, which he also says at the top of page 94, is anything can happen. Right? And the reason that anything can happen is because nothing has been established. The what would keep something from happening is the existence of something else. It's like saying you can't have both A and not A. You can't say, my table is here and my table is not here. That has to do with substance and identity. We're looking at a different form of knowing in which it's not that we can now say, it's true that the table both can be here and cannot be here. It's just that in the next moment, because we're talking about the future, what's true now, what we've just identified and therefore turned into the past, may not be true at all. Anything at all can happen because we don't know identities. We don't know substance. We don't know content. The past knows all that stuff. The future doesn't know all of that, doesn't know any of that. And that doesn't mean that the future is dumb, you know, that the future doesn't have access to that knowing. In fact, if we have a chance today, we'll talk about that. The future draws on the past. But in terms of the specific knowing that fits with the future, it involves the possibility that anything at all can happen. And in just a couple of minutes, I want us to do a little practice with that, because that's the central point. If we could be in our lives with the sense that anything can happen, you know, we say in the next moment, that way of saying it is actually already tied into the past, but for our purposes, you know, we don't have a better way of saying it. So let's say that. We say, in the next moment, which in effect means right now, because it's always the next moment, right? So in the next moment, anything at all could happen. That's what we would like to explore. So before we do a practice with that, let me just make one point with regard to that to try to clarify it, and then we'll do the practice. The question is, what is it that the future actually makes available to us? I mean, we say it makes available a not knowing. It's a special kind of knowing which doesn't know what's in the past. But there's another way to describe that, and that is brought out on page 96, and I want to talk about that for just a moment. The future, what the future presents is not substance. It presents its own arriving. And there's something quite remarkable about that. know, we don't even know how to think about that. It's not that the future arises as a thing or as a substance, clearly. That would be a past-centered way of knowing. But in the underneath the heading on page 96, the text says, instead of somehow passing on substance to the present, which is pretty much what the past does, the future sustains the present through its coming. Though this coming never arrives, its dynamic contributes the charged field within which the aliveness of present experience can unfold. So you could say with respect to the future that nothing arrives. You know, in Buddhism, and I'm not sure it's helpful to make this connection, but there's a very famous text which basically starts off by saying nothing comes, nothing goes. There is no movement. I think that has to do with the notion of identity, but you know, we don't need to worry about that right now. But it has to do with the difference between a past-centered way of knowing, for our purposes, we can say, the difference between a past-centered way of knowing and this future-centered way of knowing, in which all that the future has to offer us is its own arrival, its own dynamic, right? There is nothing we can point to and say, oh, look, the future just delivered me a present, you know. And it's very interesting in English that we have this word which has two completely different meanings, which are the word present, right? So a present is a thing. And you could say the past delivers us presents, if you wanted to say that. You know, the past delivers us all these things which come neatly wrapped up and in a bow, and we're constantly in the business of unpacking what the past presents, all these different identified entities. But the future doesn't deliver presents, it delivers the present, or you could say it delivers presence with a C, you know. It delivers the aliveness of the present, instead of delivering particular identities. And it does that by delivering its own, you could say, its own aliveness. The future is always oncoming. The future is always, you know, it's hard to say. I was going to say manifesting, but that's not quite right because it's too solid. It's the always arriving nature of what's happening. And that's where we arrive at the possibility of a practice, which I'd like us to do now for a couple of minutes. And it's actually described at the in the first full paragraph on page 96, the one above that the one I was just reading from. So actually, let's go to the very top of the page where he's saying the future allows for boundless possibilities through the availability of the future. So the always arriving of the future, right? There's no interruption or discontinuity, no resistance, no delay, no impediment. The future is a kind of pure aliveness. And it in the last program in the fall, when we were looking back, there's a quote on page 90 that I think gets right to the heart of this, which basically says, let me look up the exact language. It says, at stake in this silent battle for the being of time is whether we are truly alive. So without getting too dramatic, we could say the battle is between the past and the future. And, you know, a long time ago, I mean, from the very beginning, the past won, in the sense that we live in a world that's been established, that depends on identities and structures, and everything has already happened, did all of that. So up until now, let's say, the past has been winning. But it doesn't have to be, because in the future, anything can happen, right? The past has nothing to say about it. And instead, we can come to this question of our own aliveness. You know? So what's at stake in the battle is asking, are we alive? And it's a it's a funny question in a way, because it's so natural to say, yes, of course I am. But that's one reason that I asked you as a homework assignment to describe moments when you felt especially alive. Because when we do that, we recognize that those moments are rather rare, you know, the moments when we feel truly alive. And so the question is, can we touch that aliveness in an ongoing way? So that first full paragraph on page 96 says, we have learned to consider this unfettered present arising, which is the present of the future. It's what the future presents us as a gift, right? It doesn't present us these individual things. It presents us its own arriving, its own always arriving, its own coming to be that just keeps coming and keeps coming, and it never runs out. It's inexhaustible. And in that sense, it's something really almost miraculous. The steady availability of what is without limits. That's what the future offers us. So we've learned to consider all that as natural. In other words, we take it for granted. Once again, we're playing with words like presence and something that's been granted or given to us, right? But when we take it for granted, we don't really appreciate it as something that's given. Okay. Can we instead allow ourselves to feel grateful for this offering of time? If so, we may discover in this ongoing, unexamined dynamic a gateway to the future infinitive. And I think he says he'll have more to say about the future infinitive later, but right now, we've already said enough about it to get a sense. It's this inexhaustible, always arriving dynamic, which is the future, which is what we mean or could mean when we're trying to understand what the future is. And his suggestion here is to be alive to or sensitive to the always arriving, never defined offering of aliveness that the future presents, and to be aware of it with gratitude. It wouldn't have to be this way. I mean, you know, being alive, it's something like saying, you know, being grateful for being alive, but that so quickly becomes a, I don't know, something conceptual. It's, you know, sometimes when people almost die, I mean, from what I've read, when people almost die and then they don't, and they say, well, I'm so grateful for every moment of life. We're moving in that direction, but, or that, in a sense, is the practice. But we want to make it very concrete, very particular. In the arriving of each moment of experience, can we be grateful for what time offers us, for what the future is offering us? So it's an aliveness to what's happening with a sense of gratitude and appreciation. That's the practice. And it took me a lot of words to set it up. Rinpoche presents it very simply, but that's what I'd like to see us, or have us do now for a couple of minutes. And then I will ask people for reactions. So let's take a couple of minutes. And so we'll say maybe 3 minutes, and experiment with this, you know, with this attitude of gratitude for the arriving of the future, which is always presenting its own substance. Okay, let's do that. Okay, so this is the time for you to maybe reflect and share something about what you noticed there. So if you want to write something in the chat box, that's how we've typically done it. But of course, I encourage you to speak, and especially now in this moment, because we're waiting for people to share their experience. To be coming, up through you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And did that have to do with a feeling of gratitude or appreciation? That'll do. that sounds good. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to suggest a couple of things or mention a couple of things that came up for me. And then I see that David has written something. So one is, that they're, you know, the kind of natural enemy, you might say, for this gratitude is to get caught on either remembering something or anticipating something in the future. Both of those, even though you could talk about anticipating in the future, both of those are past-centered ways of knowing, right? Where we project a possibility and we say it might be this way or it was this way. Either way, we're connecting to a particular identity. Now, there was a moment in which a memory came up and I was able, you could say, to appreciate the memory, not the event that happened then, but to appreciate the act of remembering. And that, there was no problem with that. And I guess the one other thing I'd mention is that, you know, when you do a practice like this, or it's like most practices, you can easily find ways to do it that are, I don't know, I want to say doing it wrong, which is not quite the point, but, or cheating, which is not quite the point, but let's say ways that are not going to let you appreciate the fullness of what's being suggested. And I found that if I had an experience and then I tried to put on top of that a layer of appreciation or gratitude, that didn't work. You know, that's already making an identity and then trying to add some other feeling which has its own identity and squish them together and make them come alive that way. But that's not the aliveness that we're interested in. Okay, great. So now we have several people who have made some comments. So David, sitting quietly with eyes. I'm reading these because not everybody is online. Sitting quietly with eyes closed, feeling myself as deeply as possible, appreciating the warm embodiment of myself, allowing it to expand from a pervasive well-being. Grateful I was allowed to feel this. The gift of life was here with me. Well, that's very nice. Well put, as always, David. And you know, I think it suggests or helps us remember that there are many ways for the future to arrive. And saying that, you know, makes me realize that's not the right way to say it. It's not that the future as a thing arrives, but there's many arrivings or you know, there's an unlimited range of possible arrivings. This is the future infinity, right? The future infinitive. And you you know, what came up for you was this sense of embodiment, and that makes good sense. It's nice. Okay, Robert. Let's see. A strong sense of receiving a gift, feeling of joy and appreciation, especially now that my technology seems to finally be working. He's grateful to the people at Microsoft or Apple or whatever. No, that's good. I'm glad that it's working. And what matters here really is at the level of feeling, it seems. There's a you know, when we talk about the aliveness of our experience, it's not going to be at the level of identities, and it's certainly not going to be at the level of concepts. And that's why people are so suspicious of concepts, I think rightly so. But what we're investigating is the possibility for an aliveness that is just completely separate from the conceptual realm. Okay. Sudhi says, it seems as I regard it with appreciation, it lingers longer. How interesting. Until something takes my focus of attention and it disappears. Yeah. You know, the thing about the future is that it's not limited in time. You know, so it's this kind of very different sense of future that we're talking about now. So I think one of the things about TSK is now that we're talking about time in TSK, you know, people think they understand what the future is, and we're doing our best to really rethink it in a fundamental way. And so this future that we're exploring through the act of appreciation and a kind of an awareness of the ongoing arising, doesn't have any limits. You know, it's not like the future is one moment and then the next moment and so on. The future isn't limited in time, because those kinds of limitations all have to do with a past-centered time. And so, yes, the possibility is there for a moment to endure, I guess we could say, without ending. So, Sudhi, it seemed like you touched some of that. Caroline writes, receiving the future was linked to the in-breath. Then, suddenly I would solidify that appreciation and mull it over, and suddenly I would be past-centered again. Right, the past always comes up, doesn't it? I mean, it's funny because you could say, and I'm not sure this is quite right, but this is the way it seems to me, you could say that it's possible that what the future presents might be a past-centered way of being, as its content, you could say. That's tricky. I mean, we really have to talk about that a little bit because it's hard to say it right. But, you know, if we lose track of the aliveness and the possibility of gratitude, and we fall into something that has to do with a conceptual understanding, or as you say, Caroline, you would mull it over, right, or solidify it, well, does that mean that the future is no longer operating? No. It just means that you know, we fall into this past-centered way of being in the future, which tends to exclude the quality of appreciation and gratitude, or it tends to be, in a way, just the opposite of that quality. So, yeah, you know, it's natural, I think, to keep falling back into that. Michael writes, adding to Jack's list of qualities, gift, granting, presence. I felt that the birds chirping outside my window extended an invitation to look outside and a promise that there is a greater realm to explore. The future opens a door to the ongoing, the outpouring, the inexhaustible. Yeah, that's nice. And I think there is. We have a range of words like that. I thought earlier of the the term cornucopia, but cornucopia is kind of a funny word because it suggests a thing, you know, this horn of plenty, but it's what's pouring out of the horn that matters, and that inexhaustible quality. You know, that really is the, as I say, that's the miraculous quality. And so the future infinitive, Rinpoche says, which I think is pointing toward the same thing, we're so used to living in a world of limits, and the future is unlimited. It's to use Michael's words, it's ongoing, it's outpouring, it's inexhaustible. How can we not feel grateful if we have a sense of that? It's an invitation. So that's the range of possibilities. I actually, at one point when I was preparing for the class, it occurred to me that this, you know, I said before we did the practice, I said, well, what is it that the future presents, you know, which is different from what the past presents? And I said, the future presents its own being. You know, the future, or being, is not such a good word. It presents its own coming, its own inexhaustible outpouring, to go back to those words. And saying that, it just reminded me of this strong religious metaphor or simile that we have in our culture, the Christian image, where, you know, it's said that Christ offers his own body, right? This is my, I'm not Christian, so this is my blood you drink, this is my body you eat, kind of like that. And people, I think, I don't want to push too far in that direction because I'm guessing that's not so meaningful for a lot of the people on this call, but it's related to what we're talking about now. Because the future presents itself. It you know, it allows itself, in a sense, to be consumed. Of course, we want to consume it in a way that is not a consuming, is not a using up. Probably much better is to say it allows itself to be appreciated. It makes itself available. And then the point, of course, is not that there's a self to the future, but whatever presents itself, whatever presents, we start to try to strip away the nouns and the pronouns, whatever presents, that's the arriving of the future. Let me say one thing about the connection between the future and the past. I mean, let me stop and ask, does that seem clear and helpful, and is that something that you feel you can practice with during the week? Because this quality of just being grateful is grateful for the arising or arriving of the future. That's what I suggest we work with during the coming week, and just from time to time when you think about it. So Sudhi says that's clear, and I don't hear any objections from anybody else. Of course, it's always open, and I encourage you to discuss this on the website. How this actually works. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yes, that's a very good point. And I think we should always be keeping that in mind. But it is really, you know, two different truths, you could say. There's the truth of the past is that we are embarked on a journey through the past into the future in that sense, which will end with our death, as far as we know. And there's no denying that. You know, it's in the same, that's the same kind of past, present, future structure that we were looking at in the last program. and the same kind of past, present, future structure, which has to do with the fact that we're meeting on a Sunday, and next Sunday we will meet again. It's the calendar, it's the seasons, it's the earth going around the sun, it's the aging of our bodies. That's all there, and it's all true. And the inexhaustible, always arriving aliveness and dynamic of the future is not a part of that same temporal structure. We, as you said, Hayward, we have to step outside that structure in some way, or at least we have to be aware of this other way of relating to time, which, you know, as far as I can see, really is more true to the nature of time. But we wouldn't want to deny the other one. You know, and it's actually very important, as you know, in the Buddhist tradition, they're always encouraging you to remember your own death, and in fact, in every religious tradition, because it helps focus you. You know, you might say that it helps you connect to the immediate arriving of the future. I think there's a connection here. Michael writes, gratitude for the arising future also involves gratitude for the life present that allows us to experience this arising. Well, it may be that gratitude is a way of connecting those two. I once years ago bought a book which I never read, but it was one of those books the title of which was helpful. It was by a Christian monk, and it was called Gratitude, the Heart of Prayer. It's just something to think about. So let me say one more thing about this connection between the future and the past, because I think it is something that, you know, we can find ourselves wondering about and not being clear about. Maybe I'll say a couple of things. But I'm looking at page 95, or at least I will be as soon as I turn to page 95, where Rinpoche discusses this at least a little bit, and he says that the relation of the future to the past is that when we're in the future, you know, when we're living in the future, which I think is a possibility, it's clearly not that we're living in a place or location, but we're living in this arising and perhaps in the gratitude that is associated with it. And at the bottom of page 94, he says, when we connect with that arising, let's say when we live in the arising of the future, what is appears in all its particularity, yet there's a seeing through, as though the well-founded conventional structures of past, present, and future had become transparent. So it's that seeing through, that transparency quality. I think that's the dimension that the future gives to experience. It's the dimension that you do not find in the past, and in the past-centered way of being, which is our usual way of being. That's the knowledge that he's talking about. That's the knowledge of the future on the top of page 95. It's an unbounded opening. It's available now and available within specifics. It's available within whatever the past presents. You know, all of the identifications and the presence that the past presents, it's available within that. And in fact, so there's a very interesting sentence that I really, you know, have been thinking about in the last several days. It's actually just the first part of the sentence. In the second paragraph on page 95, Rinpoche says, transmitted forward in the taking form of the past The future transmits back in giving the present presence. So that's a very interesting and I think challenging sentence. I don't think I've made my way to the bottom of it. What I understand it to be saying is that the way that the future initially presents itself to us is exactly in the activity that takes form, you know, that gives identity. And that's the past-centered activity. But that's still an activity and still an aliveness. So that's how we initially receive, you could say, each moment. It comes to us with a certain form, you know, this conversation that we're having, the room that I'm in, the space outside, all those forms are there. And that's how the inexhaustible arriving of the future transmits itself forward. But the part that we miss is the second part of the sentence where he says, the future transmits back in giving the present presence. And that's the aliveness we've been looking at. And a little later down in that paragraph, he says, the future, I'm reconfiguring the sentence, he says, the future draws on different lineages. Well, actually, that's not quite right. Scenes appear and they draw on different lineages. We looked at the concept of lineages in the last program. That's how the past works. You know, every moment has its lineage that looks forward, or looks backward to the past. That's the transmitting forward through which the past takes form. And the future responds to that as the aliveness of that moment, an ongoing offering of being. So that's a good place to stop. We're out of time. Let me just mention, and we haven't looked at it yet, but if you're starting to work with exercise 11, as I suggested, the being aware of the stories, which are always going to be past-centered, through which we engage our lives, but also being aware of the energy and dynamic that is bound up in that story. That's exactly what this paragraph, it seems to me, is talking about. The future gives to the present, which is shaped by a story, its aliveness. And we can be grateful for that aliveness, and we can learn to discover it. And that's our practice for the week. Okay, good. Thank you very much.